Hello. The name is Rob Bennett. The book is Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. The website is passionsaving.com. The next book is Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. You are tuned in to the Anti-Passive Investing Network. We don't give specific investing advice here. We don't tell you. We don't tell you when to get in stocks or out of stocks. All we do is tell you how bad passive investing is. And we figure if we drive that message home, you can figure the rest out for yourself. That's a joke. But there's truth in it. If you've listened to other podcasts, you know that the theme that comes back over and over and over again in Rob Bennett podcast is passive investing is the enemy of the middle class investor. So, and I do believe what I believe is, it's a strange. I don't know if you can put yourself in my shoes, but if you could. You would see that it's a strange situation to be in. You know, there's the old saying about trying to sell ice cubes in Alaska, and ordinarily you would think it's hard to sell people a product they don't need. But I've got a product that should knock people's socks off. We've got a situation where the middle class is worried about its financial future, and the middle class doesn't really like to spend a lot of time studying personal finance. So they don't want to. Lots of middle class workers don't want to spend time learning about investing. And I've got an investing approach that is simple as simple could be. It greatly increases your long-term return, greatly diminishes the risk you take investing in stocks. Is totally in line with common sense, which, and that's the only investing approach that I know of where you can say that, is totally in line with what the historical data teaches us about how stock investing has always worked in the past. Its key principles are endorsed by about a dozen of the top-notch big-name experts, and after putting this idea forward 6.5 years ago, it's been discussed by tens of thousands of middle-class investors, and no one has ever found a flaw. And with all that, it remains to this day intensely, quote-unquote, controversial. And discussion of it has been banned at, I don't know, 8 or 10 discussion boards. You know, too hot to handle. All this good stuff raining down on us is too hot to handle. And now we've got a what do you call it? You know, recession and a stock market crisis, stock crash, the great stock crash of 2008. And still, here I sit, waiting for my invitation to Oprah. So. Anyway, the point here is I talk about at my website, I talk about an approach to investing called rational investing. That's the overall model for how we understand things. The particular strategy I recommend is something called valuation-informed indexing, which is just the conventional approach to indexing, the passive approach to indexing with one big change. That instead of staying with a high stock allocation when prices get to truly dangerous levels, you do the rational thing and you lower your stock allocation so that you'll be able to preserve some of your assets and invest more assets at times when stocks offer a good long-term value proposition. What a crazy far-out idea, using our common sense when it comes to investing. So, it's true what I said at the opening joke there is that This is the Anti-Passive Investing Network. The, you know, I had that, I'm still haunted by that comment by our friend Wayne. Our friend Wayne, welcome to the community. Welcome to the financial freedom community, Wayne, if you're out there listening. You're probably not, but if you are. Wayne put a letter to the editor at John Russell's site the other day, and Wayne's a good guy, and he's a rational investor, and he had some good comments to make, but he said he got my thought processes going when he said Rob sounds wounded on his podcast. He said, I've listened to 14 of them, and the guy listens to 14 of my podcast, I better do right by him. And so I just keep mulling it over. And why does he feel that way? And I think he feels that way because he wants me to just address the particulars of how to invest this way and leave out all that stuff about board politics, the battles and the egos and the death threats and all that sort of thing. Just, you know, junk that. And I do listen. I don't agree with that idea, but I do listen, and I take it into consideration, and it can influence me, you know. So if Wayne's out there and you feel, I'm not mocking you, please understand, I am not. I'm mocking me, if anything, for my reaction. But if you think I'm not listening, that's not so. I can't change my beliefs until I am genuinely persuaded. One changes one's beliefs over time. So I let things like that in. I do listen. And you know, who knows? 30 years from now, I might go along with it. But no, my take on it is investing is so much easier than most people realize. So much easier. And stock investing is so much less risky than the common perception has it. And it's maddening that we encounter such resistance in trying to help people, trying to just let people know a better way. And so the point that Wayne was getting at, which does have its funny side, and I understand his frustration to some extent, is that I do harp on passive investing. I do. And I don't know. I wouldn't say it's because I'm wounded. It's because I feel that's the barrier. That's what's holding everybody up. In other words, if we could clean the decks and we say, you know, say passive investing never existed, and we all just woke up today and we said, we've got money, we've got to invest it, how should we go about it? I am 95% confident we would all agree to rational investing. It's the most obvious thing. It's the way we buy everything. Everything that we buy, and we buy lots of things, we always look at the price. You know, houses, cars, comic books, bananas. We always look at price. And we don't think that's controversial. It's not like there are some people out there that say it's a good idea to look at price and others say no. There are some that are too lazy to look at price, and I've been that way at times in my life where I'll just say, I don't care. You know, I'm not gonna price check. I'm just gonna buy. But I wouldn't say that it's a good idea not to look at the price. I don't know anyone who says it's not a good idea. But in investing, the whole world is stood on its head, and they say, not only do the passive investors say you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to la-la land levels, they actually say it's a good idea not to. They say it's a good idea not to change your allocation, not to protect yourself, not to do anything, to be passive. You know, that's what's passive about it. Boy. So I think if we could just take that off the scene, if we could just forget everything we learned about investing over the past 30 years when passive investing became popular, and just start fresh we could start being rational investors today, we would all be investing far more effectively. We wouldn't have these stock crashes anymore. Stock crashes don't occur if the majority of investors are rational. And we would all be able to retire at least 5 years earlier. You could check this out on the Scenario Surfer, the calculator at my website. You can, it lets you run a 30-year sequence of returns and change your allocation as you please. And if you run it, you'll find that almost every time, rational investing, valuation-informed indexing, beats passive investing, rebalancing. 90% of the time. So, and often by large amounts. So the average middle-class worker could probably retire 5 years sooner. So why don't we do it? And we don't do it because there's this thing out there, this phantom called passive investing, and we can't get it out of our heads. We lost $8 trillion. But I don't think I gave the date, did I? I always give the number of the podcast and the date. This is podcast number 25. I'll be a good boy. This is podcast number... I was too anxious to get to my idiotic joke. This is podcast number 25. I'm recording it on Tuesday, October 14th, 2008. The PE10 level this morning, I believe, was 17. We had a big run-up in prices yesterday. We went up about 1,000 points. The title of this one is, we're still close to fair value. We're still at the valuation level today is fine. It's higher than it was, but we're still at a reasonable valuation level. The title of this one is, the only thing worse than short-term investing is short-term investing that pretends to be long-term investing. Yucko. I don't think I got enough sleep last night. All right, I'll settle down. That's enough. No, but that's the theme here. The theme here is, why is it that this phantom is out there? How, you know, why is it that we can't it's like some of these women, they get hooked up with a bad guy, you know, a guy that cheats on them, a guy that's just, you know, a jerk. And you know that song, is she really going out with him? You know, and you just say, okay, I don't, you know, she doesn't want to go out with me, I understand. You know, I can understand where she's coming from. But she's going out with that guy? Is she really going out with him? Are they really following passive investing after losing $8 trillion in 12 months and they can't give it up? You know, give it up, people. So why? That's the question I want to answer. The reason I focus on it in response to my friend Wayne is that I believe what's needed in Investo world today is we need to get over this, whatever you want to call it, fixation on passive investing, addiction. I think it's an addiction. That's probably the best word. We need a 12-step program. We need a 12-step program. Passive Investors Anonymous. I have thought, seriously, I've thought of, you know, bumper stickers. Passive investing hurts humans and other living things, you know, something like that. Because I think we need to sort of form a club of people that have gotten over passive investing and try to bring the rest of our fellow community members, our fellow humans, along. We want everybody to be part of this. Because we all, you see, we don't invest as individuals solely. If others don't know how to invest rationally, the market's going to be irrational. That hurts all of us. It hurts even the rational investors. So we don't want that. We're not trying to outsmart everybody else by being, you know, rational, by changing our allocation in response to price changes. we're not trying to, you know, they have this phrase in passive investing. They say, oh, if somebody makes a mistake, other investors will step in and exploit it. I'm not trying to exploit anything. I'm not into that. I'm just doing what makes sense. And I just, you know, I just refuse to turn off my brain just because I happen to be investing. The brain that I use to buy cars and houses and all those things, I refuse to switch it off when it comes to buying stocks. But I'm not trying to exploit anything. I'm not trying to outsmart any. You know, they always make it that way. They always make it this competitive thing. They'll say, oh, you're trying to beat the market. You're trying to beat the market. Who do you think you are trying to beat the market? I'm not trying to beat the market. Am I trying to beat the car dealer when I tell them, sorry, I looked in Consumer Reports and you're charging $1,000 too much? Am I trying to beat the car dealer? I'm not trying to beat him. I like the guy. The guy, I'm going to buy a car from him. If I was trying to beat him, I'd walk across the street. But I'm not going to be a fool for him. I'm not going to lay down and let him roll over me and charge me $1,000 more than the fair value of the car. Well, I'm not trying to beat the market. I'm telling the market, hey, I worked for my money. I want to hold on to it. So offer me stocks at fair value. I'm all for it. Offer me stocks at absurd prices. You'll have to wait. Get in line. You know, there's other people want my money. I got better things to do with it. So I do believe that when we overcome that obstacle, when we break down that wall, there'll just be a flood of wonderful information on how to invest effectively. You know, not just from Rob Bennett. I'm sort of tired of carrying the ball all the time. I could write more articles on more things, and I will. But I'm tired of it. I like to read, you know, I like to read my stuff, but how many Bob Dylan lyrics can you bear to hear at some point? I want to hear other people. I want to hear all my old pals talking about rational investing. Ben Solar and you know, all these guys, Fool Me Once and John D. Craig and you know, all those, you know those people. I hope you know those people. If you don't, find out. You're missing out. Find out about those people. Go to the website. Find out who they are. Go to the post archives. Find out about those people, because those people can teach you things about investing and things that Rob Bennett can't teach you, because they have different life experiences. So I want to broaden the debate. And I don't mean just these discussion boards. I want to have John Bogle contributing, you know, helping us to become rational investors, and Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and Jonathan Clements and Michael Kitsis and lots and lots and lots of others. I want the whole internet to be talking about rational ways to invest, the whole world. Why not? What's the downside? I always ask that question when I would, you know, I posted this Goon Central board, and it's owned by John Graney, and it's if anyone posts civilly, he kicks them off. It's only for goons, but he lets me stay, because the idea is the goons are gonna, you know, they're gonna ridicule Rob so it's, I don't know, it's like one of these shows, you know, these, I hate these things, but sometimes at carnivals they have these things where there's a clown or something and he insults people walking by. And so I don't know what you call those things, but that's what, I think Graney, that's what he lives for. So that's what this is. But I go over there and I just post civilly and rationally, and I respond to questions about valuation-informed indexing. I try to pull these people up. I feel that they're, you know, they're goons on the surface, but inside they're humans. I don't care what they say or how they act. I know them too well. I know them from the old days. And I try to pull them up. I try to appeal to their better nature. I try to respond to ridicule with reason. And every now and then they put up a good post. Every now and then they ask a good question or they make a good comment and I learn something. And that's, of course, a benefit. And I think that if you're going to put out something as big as the rational investing idea and the valuation-informed indexing concept, these are big ideas. If you're going to put something out like that, I think you have a responsibility to make sure you know what you're talking about. And I do everything I can in that regard. I'm a flawed human, so I can make mistakes. But the best way I know of to avoid that is to put my stuff out for questioning. And one thing you can say about those goons is they sure are happy to question Rob Bennett. So that's another reason why I post there. There's a couple different reasons. But I want them. I want everybody. Everybody to invest more effectively. I just and I use this phrase. I say I'll write a post, on whatever issue it is, and I'll say, does anybody here see any potential downside? And I know they're going to come back with these ridicule posts, these angry posts. But I'm quite sincere when I say that. Does anybody see any potential downside to changing your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes? No one's ever given a straight answer to the question. Not once. In 6.5 years. And I find it remarkable, and I find it revealing. So I better get to the... Boy, is that ever a long introduction. 22 minutes. The point, though, is the title of this podcast, if I read it, maybe I'll remember and I'll get focused. I'll read it again. The only thing worse than short-term investing is short-term investing that pretends to be long-term investing. I think it helps in getting perspective to have a little historical take on all this. And if you're trying to understand why people can't give up passive investing, I think it helps. It doesn't fully explain it. There's more than one explanation. But it helps to look historically at what has happened. Human beings do not change their viewpoints overnight. Ever. I was talking about that girl. We all know the girl, and I'm sure men do it too. Men hook up with people that are wrong for them, just as women do. But let's just say it's a woman, and she's hooked up with a bad guy. And you say, why? Well, I don't want to psychoanalyze here, but I don't know. We adopt certain views. We say, oh, maybe he has his good side, she hooked up with him for that reason, and she started all these things in her head. She got all these ideas in her head, this narrative of how her life was going to play out, and now it's not playing out right. But it's not so easy to abandon a narrative that was important to you. So eventually, maybe she will leave him. Maybe it'll take a while, and we don't change our thinking on major issues just because we happen to read an article somewhere making a strong case that our thinking is wrongheaded. It takes years. And so we have to try to understand how is it that passive investing came to be implanted in our heads as such a valuable idea? And the history here is that, unfortunately, my history is weak. When you go, I know the current history well, say from the mid-1990s forward, when I've been studying investing intensely. But the early history, I have some vague understanding of it, but not detailed. So don't put a whole lot of confidence in too much that I say about the early years. But I need to go back to them to put this in historical perspective. Pre-1960s, I believe that emotional investing, which emotional / passive investing has always been with us, and rational investing has always been with us. And they've always been competing. But so I'm sort of a believer in there's nothing new under the sun, that we play out these patterns over and over again. And one very important pattern that you have to know to understand why stock investing is so messed up today is, this is so critical. Most areas of human endeavor, there's a thing called progress. We like to think we're advancing in our understanding over time. So let's say once upon a time we thought the Earth was flat. Well, then we learned the Earth was round. And then, later on we learned there's gravity. And then we learned, E equals MC squared. In other words, it's a line moving upwards. Our knowledge is improving. So today, obviously, we have things that once upon a time we didn't have. We didn't used to have airplanes or computers or televisions. These were advances. We didn't used to have anesthesia, which is a rough one. But now we've got that. We've got Novocaine, when they drill your teeth. I'm very, very happy about that. So we have something called progress. In stock investing, not so much. In stock investing, learning tends to be circular. Because what happens, because investing is so emotional an endeavor, and that's a constant theme here, investing is 70% emotion, only 30% intelligence. When stock prices are high, we make up fictions to justify high stock prices. That's what passive investing is. It's a fiction that was developed to justify investing in stocks at times when investing in stocks is a bad idea. It's a fiction. Then prices go low, and we develop the opposite fiction. Then, we're not there yet, but it may be that in years to come, stock prices are going to drop very low, just as low, just as far down on the low side as they once were, as in recent, the past 10 years, they've been on the high side. Then we will be developing fictions for why nobody should ever be invested in stocks. Then the media will be telling us, instead of telling us stocks for the long run, don't panic, can't time the market, buy and hold, instead of those marketing slogans, they will be telling us, oh, everybody knows that stocks are not for the middle class person. The stocks are for a very rare, special person that studies them all the time. And don't you remember what happened in the great crash of 2008 through 2012? Aren't you paying attention? Don't you know that no one can afford to own stocks in today's world if they're planning a retirement? That's gambling. Stocks are gambling. There was a famous cover of Business Week magazine in 1982, The Death of Equities. And the article was saying that the middle class had wised up. They had realized that putting your money in stocks is foolishness. You shouldn't have any money in stocks. You should be putting it in art. That's what they were saying. Put it in art or, I don't know, collectibles or commodities. I think CDs were paying high prices at that time. I don't know. All these things. And of course, the stocks were at a price then where the historical, if they had looked at the historical data, they would have known that in the next 10 years, stocks were priced to deliver an annualized real return of 17% per year for the next 10 years. So, if you hadn't been all caught up in the art collection craze, you could have made yourself a lot of money. You could have retired early. But so it goes. Stock investing, knowledge of how to invest in stocks is circular. It's not an upward line in general. So that would fall under the idea there's nothing new under the sun. And that's sort of a pessimistic way of looking at things. If that's really true, and one could argue that it's true, if that's really true, then everything I'm trying to do is hopeless. People are never going to learn how to invest in stocks. They're going to learn to avoid stocks, and then they're going to learn to be irrationally in love with stocks, and then the irrational love is going to cause them to avoid stocks again. And then the huge returns that follow from having millions avoid stocks is going to teach them to fall irrationally in love again, and it just would repeat, in a pattern like that. And if that's the case, we're doomed. We can never invest rationally. It's a foolish endeavor for me to think we could. But while I think there's a lot of truth to this circular idea, I also think there's been advances over time so that while in a way there's nothing new under the sun, each rotation is a little different. So there are things. For example, there are things that change. For example, middle-class involvement in the stock market is a relatively new phenomenon. And that changes. That changes the nature of the game. I think it's changed it for the worse so far. I think one of the things that happened in the 90s, a lot of people wonder, why is it in the 1990s we went to valuation so far over what we ever did before? You know, what caused that? I think it's middle-class fear. I think the middle-class worker is worried about his place, that middle-class jobs are not totally secure and pensions are no longer secure. And there's a worry there. There's an anxiety. And there was a feeling that by over-investing in stocks, we could overcome our anxieties on that score. And of course, it's been a disaster. It's been the biggest disaster you could imagine. But I think often when people become desperate, they make mistakes. And I think that may be part of what's been going on, is that we became too desperate and we should have taken a more long-term approach. But the anxiety is understandable. I can relate to that anxiety. So I don't think, and I think that anxiety can lead to something good, because we now live in an environment when we need advice that works for the middle class investor. And that's what I try to put forward. I don't put forward advice for the super sophisticated investor. The advice I put forward is advice for the middle class investor, the sort of typical middle-class investor who is putting money into his or her 401k to fund a retirement. And, you know, it's not trying to outsmart the market. You know, it's not really the goal. They want a good return. It's the person who wants a good return at limited, reasonable amounts of risk. Willing to take on some risk, not afraid of risk, but not wanting to take on extreme risk. That's who I aim my advice at. And I think now that we have a market of people that need that information, I am hopeful that it will be possible for quote-unquote experts to develop advice that would help those people and for there to be a market for it. And that's a big deal, because I always go back to that comment by Michael Kitsis, and you can read his emails with me at the website. They're at the blog. You know, Michael made that great comment when I pointed out to him that most financial planners are aware today that the efficient market theory has been discredited. Efficient market theory / passive investing has been discredited for 20 years now. Why do financial planners continue to give us this awful, awful advice? You know, leaving your stock allocation at a high level when prices are out of control. And Michael said it's true. That most financial planners understand that the passive investing has been discredited. But he said, what other model do we have? And he said, we have a big problem. If we talk straight to people and we let them know how dangerous it is to invest in stocks at times of high prices, we'll be out of business, because the guy down the corner is not going to tell them that. And people are highly emotional. They're hardwired to do just the wrong thing. They're hardwired to stick with that high stock allocation. People love the idea of investing in stocks when they're overpriced. We'll go out of business if we talk straight. Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe that has been true in the past and it won't be true in the future. If a market develops, if middle class investors suffer terrible losses, as you know, they already have, but if those losses continue to mount, there may come a time when middle class investors say, hey, we're ready for the straight story. And there will be enough of them looking for it that there will be a market for it. And that could change the history of investing, I believe. And we would still have these cycles, I'm certain. Passive investing is never going to be gone from the scene. It's like the poor. It will be with us always. But I believe we can set a positive, we can move things in a positive direction. That's my belief. So what I'm looking for in this podcast is historical perspective. How did it come to be that passive investing became this bad dating partner for the middle class investor, this loser that we can't seem to shake off. If you go back before the 1960s, investing was different than what it is today. It was not a game for the middle class investor, first of all. It was a game primarily for the rich. And the rich, you know, they're different in that they don't have as much at risk. If you're rich, by definition, you have surplus money, surplus savings. So the losses that are common in the stock market, stocks have always been volatile, it's not that big a deal for the wealthy investor. Obviously, they don't like losing money. Nobody likes losing money. But the wealthy investor is much better able to handle volatility than the middle class investor, who just doesn't have that big a margin in terms of their portfolio, in terms of their retirement portfolio. They can't afford to lose as much. So I have never believed that the same investing advice makes sense for wealthy investors and for middle class investors. Yet to a large extent, that's what we try to put forward today. That's what the experts try to put forward today. They give cookie cutter advice. And some of these passive investing ideas might make sense if you're super wealthy and, you know, a 70% loss in your portfolio. You know, if you have $10 million, a 70% loss leaves you with $3 million. So you're still okay. And the $7 million will come back someday. They when they say that, they're telling the truth. That's true. If you hold for 30 years, passive investing works. The problem is if you have $10 million and you lose $7 million, and then it comes back 15 years later, you're fine. But if you're a middle class investor and you don't have $10 million, you have $500,000 and you lose, you know, $300,000, you're crushed. You've only got $200,000 left and you're getting close to retirement age. So it's all the difference in the world. But that's a big change. That in earlier days, before the passive investing era, investing was a rich person's game. Another big change is that we did not have a lot of academic research dealing with investing in those earlier days. We've always had analysts. You know, there are a lot of good books from the old days. I love to read old books on investing. I think they're, as a general rule, I think they're more intelligent than the stuff that comes out today. But, of course, maybe that's just the classics or the ones that survive. Maybe that's the reason. But we've always had that. So there's always been information, but we didn't have, I don't think the academic world studied investing to the extent it has in recent decades. So in the 60s, that's really when the story started, the passive investing story. And that was when Eugene Fama, you know, did a paper in the early 60s on the efficient market theory. And this started being actively, these ideas that ultimately became passive investing began to be debated in the academic world. In the 1970s, they still were generally not known to the average investor. In the 1970s, a book came out that had a great influence in popularizing the ideas that became passive investing. And that was A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And it's a classic investing book. If you have the time available to you, you should certainly read it. There's a lot of good in that book. There's obviously things in it I don't agree with, things that I think are very bad. But I don't think they were bad at the time it came out. I feel about passive investing much the way I feel about the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. Passive investing, for all its flaws, was probably a good thing at the time it was developed. Human beings learn through a building block process. We learn one thing and then we build on top of that. That's our foundation. We build on top of that and then we build on top of that. And we learn from our mistakes. And there's really no other way to get from where you are to where you want to be. You can't just jump across the river in one big jump. You have to take steps. And we never would have had the new school safe withdrawal rate studies if we hadn't first had the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. It's by looking at those old school studies that we discovered how we got retirement planning wrong, and then we fixed it, and now we got it right. Let's hope. It may be that we'll find flaws in the new school, and then there'll be a new new school. And the same thing with passive investing. I think passive investing, efficient market theory slash passive investing, I speak of them almost as if they're the same thing. They're not identical, but the efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for the passive investing strategy or the passive investing model of understanding how stocks work. That book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, popularized the passive investing concept. So that's when average investors began to hear about it, and it began to catch on, it be discussed in, you know, newspapers and television shows and all this sort of thing. The 1980s, those were the years of the indexing revolution. Bogle, I believe, founded Vanguard in the late 1970s, and during the 1980s, Vanguard was becoming increasingly popular, Bogle was becoming increasingly popular, and indexing was becoming increasingly popular. Now, indexing is not passive investing, and, you know, this drives me a little crazy. I think one time I looked up passive investing on Wikipedia or something, and if you read the definition, it sounds like the two things are almost identical. They're the same thing. Passive investing is indexing. Well, I don't agree even a little bit. I endorse indexing. I love indexing. Indexing is just obtaining a high level of diversification at low cost. You know, what's not to like? But passive indexing is a recipe for disaster, because what indexing really does is it ties your fate to the fate of the market. So when the market is doing well, indexers are on the top of the world. How could you lose? But then when the market is doing bad, you're tied to the ship. And so when the market's sinking underwater, you're sinking underwater with it. Whatever the market does, that's what you're going to do when you're an indexer. So, you know, what valuation-informed indexing does is, it's an active approach to indexing, not a passive approach. It just says, when the market is priced such that you know it's going to sink in the not-too-distant future, you pull back, you lower your allocation so that you don't sink with it, you don't suffer those blows. And when the market's primed, you know, for a big move forward, when prices are reasonable, you participate at a much higher level in the market. So passive investing is not the same thing as indexing. They're very different concepts. They've gotten confused in the public mind because Bogle endorses both of them. And I've said, you know, on earlier podcasts, Bogle is, in my view, 60% rational, 60% a supporter of rational investing. Many of Bogle's ideas are rational investing ideas. And he's 40% a proponent of passive investing. And you mix the two and you've got this crazy patchwork that they call, you know, they call it passive, but it's really passive indexing. It's not just passive investing. And so it's got good elements in it and then bad elements that ruin it. It's a mess. But if you pull out the good stuff, it's magic. And that's really the point of this podcast. That's really where I want to take this. But I just want to follow the history and, you know, till we bring it up to current day. In the 1990s, that's when passive investing really got sort of locked in. It became not just an idea, not just one idea in a field, but it became the dominant. Middle-class investors were all paying attention by the 90s. Stocks had been doing very, very poorly up to 1982. They did well throughout the 1980s, but not absurdly so. Rational investors would have been going with high stock allocations throughout the 80s. Stocks had a very strong value proposition in those days. But then in the 90s, the value proposition, valuations went so high, especially in the late 90s, that the value proposition went very low, and rational investors lowered their allocations or pulled out altogether. Passive investors just stuck the foot to the accelerator. They just said, we've got it figured out. We know all the answers. We don't need to talk to anybody. We know everything. We're masters of the universe. That's where this ugly side of passive investing came out. When passive investing changed, it was transformed from a useful academic theory, a theory that got a lot of things wrong, but also got a lot of things right, that was sort of headed in the right direction, but made a few wrong turns, into this arrogant, We will not be questioned. We are science. We know all the answers, and we don't need to listen to anybody else. We're it. We're it. And no one else has a right to speak. Passive investors are it. There's nothing to be said. That's where we got that sick side of passive investing that has become dominant today. And then, of course, in the 2000s, we had years of dead money and worse. Up until recent months, investing in stocks has been dead money. Investing in the super safe asset classes have been outperforming stocks for 10 years now. And now in 2008, the crash that I call the great passive investing crash of 2008. Now we have the loss in $8 trillion in 12 months. Hopefully we have the middle class starting to question passive investing so that we can take this idea to a more positive place. And my hope moving ahead is that in the 2010s, we can move to a golden age of investing, the age of rational investing. It wouldn't take very much. You see, what happened is we've gone through a process here. You could trace rational investing all the way back to the 1960s. Eugene Fama was wrong about the efficient market theory. The efficient market theory is silly. Silly. I can't go into the efficient market theory in depth. I'll do a separate podcast on it, but the idea is not all that complex. The idea is just basically, I thought I gave a very good description of it in the last podcast, the one on it takes a community to fix what's wrong with stock investing today. The efficient market theory says that the market as a whole does a better job of setting the stock price, of knowing what stock price is right, than any investor within the market. No matter how intelligent you are, no matter how informed you are, the market as a whole does a better job of setting the proper price than you do. That's where this idea comes up, where they say you can't beat the market or you can't time the market. In order to time the market, you'd have to have some knowledge that the market doesn't possess. If you time the market, it means lowering your stock allocation or increasing your stock allocation at various times. For that to work, you'd have to have an edge on the market. You would have to know something the market doesn't know. And the efficient market theory, it essentially says it can't be done. The market knows more than you do, or certainly as much as you do. You can never know more than the market. And that idea is silly. But it's not. It's silly for reasons that are both obvious and not obvious. Today, I'd say the reasons are obvious, because we've seen, you know, we have all these studies that have discredited the theory. We've seen how it works in the real world. It's a disaster. We've seen what passive investing, all the emotion that it causes among people who follow it. We've seen this disaster of the efficient market theory getting our retirement planning numbers wrong. And then we've seen that the people who advocate it don't even care enough to want to change it, to want to fix the studies, you know, for 6 years. We've seen all these things. So today it's obvious that the efficient market theory is nonsense. But it was not obvious when Eugene Fama came out with the idea. It was a big advance at that time. And so what's really been going on is, over the years, we've seen an increasing, I'd say, rationalization of stock investing. And I don't mean rationalization in a negative sense. I mean making it a more rational endeavor. There's been a study, and there's, you know, there's so many people doing academic studies today, that wasn't true before. So what's happened is we have been living for the past, how many years back is that, 40? If you go, say, from 1970 to today, it's almost 40 years. If you go from 1960, it's almost 50. So say 45 years of making the stock investing project a more rational one that's based on study, numbers, you know, in a good sense. I don't mean rationalizing in a negative sense. I mean it in a positive sense. And passive investing is right at the heart of that. That's why I complain about the arrogance of the passive investor, right? I hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. But there is something at the core that's good about it. It's good to base your investing ideas on knowledge, not on emotion. So there's a good thing going on there. The problem is it got twisted. It got twisted. It turned into this thing, and you'll see this paradox. If you listen to passive investors, you'll see it. On the one hand, they'll say, we've got studies. Our approach is all science. And then the next day, they'll turn around and they'll say, we are know-nothing investors. It's impossible to know anything about the market. And you're like, what? On the one hand, you're telling me you're all science. And on the other hand, you're telling me you're know-nothings. Isn't there a contradiction there? And there is. What's going on is that there's a flaw in this rationalization of investing. And it goes right to the core. It's the flaw is right in the foundation of the building. So what's been going on for 45 years is people have been building this beautiful building. And it reaches up into the heavens. It's a skyscraper. And it's an important building. We need that building. We need this rationalization of the investing project. But little did they know back in the 1960s, Eugene Fama isn't God. No one knows everything. He made a mistake. And there's a flaw in the foundation of that building. And the whole thing is going to collapse. And that's where the $8 trillion loss comes in. It's in the collapse. But the wonderful thing is, if only people could see into the future, if only people could see into the 2010s, is that we have learned a lot building that building. We've gone down, a lot of the things we've learned they're wrong. Like, for example, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. The numbers are wildly wrong. The studies are dangerous. Millions of people are going to suffer busted retirements. Bad, 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 bad. But the idea of using historical stock return data is a good one. The idea of looking at the worst case scenario to figure out how much you should take out of your retirement plan each year, that's a good idea. The idea of trying to determine what stock allocation you should be using in retirement by sort of playing with the return sequences that we've seen in the past, that's a good one. See, there are good things going on underneath the surface. A lot of the problem is just that flaw at the core of the building that causes everything that's done under the passive investing model to be wrong. So we're at a situation today where, 90% of the investing advice is wrong. We need to take all the books, and like burn them or something. But before we burn them, we have to make copies because some of the analytical work is of great value if we just fix the numbers so that they're accurate instead of wrong. Why are they all wrong? For just the reason I gave in that earlier podcast on It Takes a Community. They are wrong because the people who developed these ideas were numbers-oriented people. They were not people-oriented people. And they left out the human element. When they say that the market knows what the price should be more than any individual investor, they are describing an idealized state, or they are describing an artificial world where emotion is not present. If they're assuming, see, the assumption is what's always skipped over. They are assuming that it's sort of like the premise of capitalism. Adam Smith's Invisible Hand, it reminds me of that. The Invisible Hand, the idea is if we allow competing businesses, the market will always sort of correct itself and products will always be set at the best price and that sort of thing. And if there are shortages, new companies will move in to meet the need. That we don't need government to say what industry should be developed. The market can do that, not deliberately, but by the workings of an invisible hand. Well, the efficient market theory is very similar. It's a very similar concept in my mind. What it's saying is, you don't need to study what the market price should be. You don't have to look at PE10. See, the efficient market theory people, they don't look at PE10 because they think it's a waste of time. They say all you need to know what the price of the market should be is what is the market price? Because you've got all these actors in the market, millions of people, and they're all acting in their own self-interest. And some of them, you know, are doing dumb things. But other ones, every time somebody does something dumb, somebody tries to exploit it on the other side. And the net result is the dumbness is canceled out by the smartness, and you end up with something in the neighborhood of the right price. The market knows better than anyone what the right price is. And in a theoretical world, that could happen. But it can't happen in a world of humans, because humans have emotions. And so it's not true that we are all trying to maximize our gains from stock investing. It's not true. We might like to flatter ourselves and tell ourselves that that's true. I think we do. And that's one of the reasons I think why we have hostility to the idea of rational investing. One of the things that rational investing tells people is we don't know as much as we think we do. We're not rational. We're not smart. Even if we've gone to school for 25 years, we are emotional. We do dumb things with our money. And we hate hearing that. We hate hearing that. It makes us embarrassed. It makes us nervous. It makes us anxious because we think, what do you mean? I'm being dumb with my retirement money? That's scary. But it's true. It's true. We all are emotional. Eugene Fama is emotional. John Bogle is emotional. John Graney is emotional. John Walter Russell is emotional. Rob Bennett is emotional. We're all emotional. So we're all, you know, one of the things they say about me is they say, oh, Rob, you know, he's arguing against stocks when they're overvalued, and he's arguing in favor of TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, but even when prices go down, he's going to have such an emotional attachment to TIPS and such an emotional aversion to stocks that he's still going to not want to go into stocks. If that's true, I'm false to myself. I fail myself. But when people say that, and again, this is one of the reasons I like to post at the Goon Central board, that these people can keep me honest. Is there a little bit of truth to it? I think there is the potential that there could be a little bit of truth to it. You start investing a certain way, and you want to defend that. In other words, if I'm at a discussion board and somebody raises a flaw with one of my calculators, I hope that I let that in and fix the calculator and become a better investor as a result. But we all of us are humans. All of us have a temptation to say, oh, that's not a big deal. So that's what happened. All the people that came up with the efficient market theory, they bought into the idea. I don't think they really examined it, but it made sense to them. They said, and again, there was not this literature before. This was a big breakthrough. This was exciting. You know, stock investing had never been studied to this extent. And they said, wait a minute, we've got a model now. We've got a way to look at stock investing, and it does make some sense. And it's something that, you know, academics can study forever. Because as long as you leave the human element out, you can reduce everything to numbers. And that's what gets you tenure, you know. So that's what happened. They bypassed that just one little point, you know, that humans are emotional. But boy, did that turn out to be a big point. And I think what happened is there was a phrase that John D. Craig at the Vanguard Diehards board used to make. And he used to say, well, he agreed with me that valuations affect long-term returns. And he'd say, well, Bogle sort of, he plays games with it. And he says, those are, but he liked Bogle. He said, it's good that he plays games. That's what John D. Craig used to argue. It's good. Because he said, most people can't understand this. And so Bogle sort of, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. He acknowledges that valuations affect long-term returns. But then he says, don't change your allocation. When prices get out of control, both things can't be true. But he said, Bogle's engaging in quote-unquote white lies. The suggestion is these lies don't really amount to all that much. Well, I think John D. Craig is onto something, but I don't think they ended up being white lies. I think they started out being white lies. I believe that the guy is right, the guy who said all of this was developed, these slogans, not the academic idea. The academic ideas, I think, are legitimate. I think they were sincere. And then they said, okay, when Bogle got, not just Bogle, but when Wall Street got a hold of the efficient market theory idea, they said, okay, we've got to somehow deal with all this academic research. We can't keep selling investing the old way, where we sell, we have brokers advising people to buy individual stocks. That model's outdated. We need to replace it. We need to come to terms with what Eugene Fama has done. And that's when I think they went to the marketing departments and they said, how can we sell this? And the marketing departments, they probably did surveys. They found out what people think about investing, what their fears are, what their hopes are. And they said, people want to hear something that's sort of prudent. They want good returns, but they want something simple. They don't want anything complicated. They want good returns, they want simple, and they want limited risk. And that's how passive investing has been sold. And so they come up with slogans that have emotional appeal. When they say, timing doesn't work, what's the emotional appeal there? You would think telling people something doesn't work would be a negative, wouldn't you? Intuitively, you would think people would want to hear that it does work, not that it doesn't work. But not really. Because I mentioned, one of the things they want is simple. Well, if you say timing works, you're putting a burden on people. You're telling them you've got to figure out when it works and when it doesn't work. It's not that hard. All you have to do is look at the PE10 level, but it's a little complication. If you just say, and short-term timing doesn't work, so that's another complication. You've got to distinguish short-term timing from long-term timing. But if you just say timing doesn't work, you've eliminated all those complexities. It's just simple as simple could be. That sells. And another reason why it sells, it sounds prudent. It's almost like you're saying gambling doesn't work. Because a lot of the average middle class people that buy stocks, they're nervous about putting their money into stocks. The one thing they don't want to do is think that stock investing is gambling. Well, when you say, I'm not the guy trying to sell you stocks. I'm not trying to push gambling on you. I'm telling you timing doesn't work. I'm a truth teller. I'm giving you the hard news. You've got them on your side. You've got the middle class investors on your side when you say something like that. They don't know the details. The middle class investors haven't studied it. They don't know if timing works or timing doesn't work. They don't know. But the impression they get is, this Bogle guy, he's a straight guy. And of course he is a straight guy on a lot of things. So the image gets reinforced. He's straight on cost, He says, I'm the cost leader, and he is. And he's straight on ethics in the industry. He stands up for the little guy. So they notice these things and they say, that same guy's telling us timing doesn't work. So they buy into it. That's why passive investing has become this monster that we can't defeat. And I think Bogle, I don't always want to personalize it and say Bogle. He's the personification of all this, but lots of people. I think they believed that timing didn't work. I think when the book came out, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, that was a huge advance. And I believe that book was an effort to tell it the way it is. At the time, I think it was 1974 or something like that. That was state-of-the-art knowledge. And it was a big deal that people were learning that short-term timing doesn't work. People didn't know that before. Most people were trying, and the newspapers still don't know it. The newspapers still report the story as if the job is to engage in short-term timing. To this day, you pick up the newspaper, and all they talk about is, this guy says stocks are going to go up next week. This guy says the market's going to open down tomorrow. All this idiotic garbage. And again, this is another reason why they love Bogle. Bogle is against the idiotic garbage. God bless him. So that was part of the marketing pitch, too. Marketing is not always bad. Marketing can be taking a good idea and making it sellable. So I think passive investing was a major advance. It was a 50% rationalizing of the investing project. 50% was right, 50% was wrong. The idea that short-term timing doesn't work was right. The idea that that long-term timing doesn't work is wrong. So they got it half right, and then they marketed it. And then when they marketed it, they found pitches that work, and then, of course, the idea worked. It wasn't just that they marketing. If the dogs don't like the dog food, the greatest marketing plan in the world doesn't work. Well, they trotted this out, and then we had this huge bull market, and that proved the marketing was right in the real world. So that's where the monster came from. But the problem is, the title of this podcast, the only thing worse than short-term investing is short-term investing that pretends to be long-term investing. Well, in the old days, pre Eugene Fama, everybody was engaged in short-term timing. They were trying to, they were following these idiot newspaper articles and trying to say, is the market up, is the market down, and all that. And now we've rationalized it and we took that out. But so passive investing pretends to be long-term investing, no question about it. But it's really not. It's not investing where you try to guess where the market's going to go next week or next month or even next year. But it is, it's an approach that only works in bull markets. What you're doing, if you don't change your stock allocation, what you're doing is you're tying your fate to the fate of the market. As long as the market does well, you do well. When the market does poorly, you get crushed. So what passive investing is it's a bit longer term than jumping in and out all the time. But it's not long-term investing because bull markets only last. I mean, this last one went from 82, lasted 18 years. And that was a long one. So bull markets frequently only last 15 years. So passive investing goes from, say, an approach that lasted 6 months or a year. It increases it to 15 years, which I guess is a step in the right direction. But the trouble is, why I say it's even worse than short-term investing. Short-term that pretends to be long-term is even worse than short-term is that if you engaged in short-term investing, say you weren't engaged in passive, you were the pre-1960s model. Well, when stocks started going down, and everybody with any common sense knew they were going down hard when they reached the price levels they reached in the 1990s, you would just get out. You know, your common sense tells you you're in a burning building. Run for it, man. But not the passive investor. The passive investor, he's got this idea in his head that he's a long-term investor. He's got to stay in the burning building. So we've got people sticking with passive investing even after an $8 trillion loss. They can't bear to give it up. And I remember I asked John Graney, I'm not trying to pick on him. It blew my mind. I asked him once, this was a long, long time ago, 2003. And I pointed out, he was saying, I'm just going to stick. He said that the ideal allocation is 74%. And he has something higher than that. He has 90%. And he says, I'm just sticking with stocks. And I said, John, do you understand that the last time we went to these valuation levels, the stock market dropped by 89%, 90%. So if you needed $40,000 a year to live on in retirement, your 4% rule, that you had $1 million saved, you take out $40,000 a year. Okay? Now you suffer a 90% loss. That means you've got $100,000 left. And you're going to take out $40,000 a year when you've only got $100,000 and you're not working? And John said, yes. That was his answer. Yes. And I remember my response. I put up a post and I didn't debate it at all. I just said, excuse me, everyone. I'm going to take a brief screaming break. I'll be back in a little while. Because that it's frightening that there's a human being out there that says that, and he is not the only one. They asked that question at the Bogleheads board just a month ago or so, and they took a poll, and 65-70% of the board said, if stocks went to zero, I would never take my money out of stocks. I'll let the life savings all go away, all depleted. That's fine, but I will never change my stock allocation. I hope it's not true. I hope these people will change their stock allocation at some point, but it's scary. So that's why I say, I really think we are on the verge of a breakthrough. I think we had a breakthrough in the 1960s with the discovery of the efficient market theory. I think we had another breakthrough in the late 1970s with Bogle's indexing revolution. But what we've got today is the worst of all worlds. We've got a half-rational investing approach. Passive investing is half-rational. But the part that's not rational is dominant. The crazy part that says don't change your stock allocation, that's madness. And so it's sort of one of these situations where you say a little knowledge is dangerous. We'd be better to go back to the old way and not know anything and just try to engage in short-term timing, because at least then when things go wrong, you can bail out. But passive investing is you tie yourself to the mast and you say, I go down with the ship. The ship goes to the bottom of the ocean. I go to the bottom of the ocean. And that's what I'd like people to think about today. And I pray that these losses we have suffered recently will cause some people to start to reevaluate and start to think, because all the information is there for a change to the rational investing model. All the pieces are in place. If only we can get this bad idea off the scene, a bad idea that was once a good idea, but that has failed us. Passive investing is the god that failed, and we need to move on. And today, passive investing is no longer a good thing. Passive investing is a very, very dangerous thing. The only thing worse than short-term investing is short-term investing that pretends to be long-term investing. We need to move to a true long-term investing approach. I believe that's the rational investing approach. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.